Picture the last few seconds of a spacecraft coming home. What do you see? For most of us, the picture is a capsule. A blunt cone under three orange and white parachutes, swinging in the wind, dropping into the ocean while a recovery ship waits over the horizon. Splashdown. That's been the shape of coming home for 60 years. Now change the picture. Same spacecraft, same trip back from orbit, but this time it's got wings. It lines up on a runway, it flares, it touches down on main gear and rolls out on a nose wheel, and 45 minutes later a ground crew walks up to it the same way they'd walk up to a business jet on the ramp. That second picture is a real vehicle. It's called Dream Chaser, and today we're going to break it down. I'm Vector. This is Clear Direct on Radio Hangar, and I want to spend this segment on the one spacecraft flying right now that a pilot can actually look at and understand, because it doesn't fall out of the sky, it flies. Before we get into it, this segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey one coin at a time. Beautifully made, built to last, and the kind of thing you actually want to hand somebody. AviationSoul.com. So let's start with what this thing actually is, because the shape is the whole story. Dream Chaser is what engineers call a lifting body. And a lifting body is a strange, beautiful idea. On a normal airplane, the wings make the lift, and the fuselage just carries the payload along for the ride. On a lifting body, the fuselage itself is shaped to make lift. The whole vehicle is the wing. It's got small wings out at the back, but the fat, rounded, flat-bottomed body is doing most of the work. It looks a little like somebody took a wing and inflated it. Why build something that odd? Here's what most people miss. The shape is a compromise between two jobs that fight each other. Job one is surviving re-entry. When you come back from orbit, you're moving around 17,000 miles an hour. And all that speed has to turn into heat. A blunt shape is good at that. A blunt shape pushes a shockwave out in front of the vehicle and lets the air, not the metal, carry away most of the heat. That's why capsules are blunt. Blunt is survivable. Job two is landing on a runway. And a runway landing wants the opposite of blunt. It wants something that can glide. Something with enough lift and enough control to be flown down final and put on the numbers by a human being or an autopilot. The lifting body is the shape that says yes to both. Blunt enough on the bottom to take the heat. Wing-like enough overall to glide home and land. Sierra Space, the Colorado company building it, didn't invent that idea. They inherited it. And the lineage is worth knowing, because it runs straight through aviation history. Back in the 1960s and 70s, NASA and the Air Force flew a whole family of these things out at Edwards. The M2F2, the HL-10, the X-24, wingless little wedges that got dropped from under the wing of a B-52, lit a rocket, and then glided down to the desert lake bed. If you ever watched the opening credits of the old $6 Million Man show, that tumbling crash was a real lifting body, the M2F2 going in hard. These were dangerous hand-flown machines, and the pilots who flew them proved something important. You can bring a wingless, wing-shaped body back from the edge of space and land it on a runway. It works. That research fed the space shuttle. And a Soviet design from that same era, a little space plane called the Buor 4, got photographed by the Australian Navy during an ocean recovery, and those photos shaped the outline that eventually became Dream Chaser. So when you look at this vehicle, you're looking at the far end of a 60-year engineering conversation about how to come home with wings. The data tells an interesting story about why that matters, and it's not just that a runway landing looks cooler than a splashdown. Let's break down the actual advantages, because they're real and specific. The first one is gentle. A capsule coming back through the atmosphere pulls somewhere around 4 G's on the crew, sometimes more on a steep return. A lifting body flies a shallower path. It uses that lift to stretch the re-entry out, spread the deceleration over more time, and the result is a return that pulls under 2 G's, under 2 G's. Sustained is roughly a steep turn in a Cessna. Why does that matter? Because of what you're bringing home. Think about a science experiment on the International Space Station. Protein crystals grown in weightlessness, cell cultures, delicate instruments, mice in some studies. If you bring those back in a capsule, they take a 4G deceleration and then a hard smack into salt water, and then they sit in the ocean until a ship arrives. Some of that science does not survive the trip. A gentle low-G runway landing changes what you can bring back intact. That's the pitch. Dream Chaser isn't trying to replace the capsule for hauling people up. It's trying to be the good way to bring fragile things down. The second advantage is the runway itself. When a capsule splashes down, you need ships, you need divers, you need a whole marine operation, and then a longboat ride back to port. Dream Chaser is designed to roll to a stop on a normal runway. Sierra Space has talked about landing it at the old space shuttle runway at Kennedy, and eventually at ordinary commercial runways. The moment it stops rolling, your ground crew has the payload in hand. For time-sensitive cargo coming off the station in the morning and being in a lab that afternoon, that access is the whole point. The third advantage is where it gets interesting for anybody who cares about the cost of spaceflight, and that's reusability. This vehicle is built to fold its wings, ride up inside a rocket faring like ordinary cargo, and then be flown again. The plan is for each space plane to fly at least 15 missions. And that's the same bet the whole industry is making right now. You don't get cheap access to space by building a new vehicle every time. You get it by landing the vehicle, inspecting it, and flying it again, the way we fly airplanes. The first ship is built. It has a name, Tenacity. And here's a detail I love as an engineer. Sierra Space named the individual vehicle, the way you'd name a ship or register a tail number, because the plan is for that specific airframe to come back and fly over and over. You don't bother naming something you're going to throw in the ocean once. Now, I promised you balance, and I meant it, because there's a version of this story that's all promise, and that version is not honest. Let's talk about the hard part. The hard part is that Dream Chaser has been almost ready for a very long time. The program traces back more than 15 years. It competed to carry astronauts for NASA's Commercial Crew Program, the contract that eventually went to the SpaceX Dragon and the Boeing Starliner, and Dream Chaser lost that competition. It did not go away. It pivoted to cargo and it won a NASA contract to resupply the space station. But the schedule has slipped again and again and again. First flight was going to be 2021, then 2022, then later. And as we sit here today, that first cargo flight still has not happened. Here's what most people miss about a slip like that. It is not usually one big failure. It's the accumulation of 100 small, unglamorous problems, and every one of them is the kind of thing you cannot skip when the vehicle has to survive orbit and re-entry and a runway landing all in one trip. The thermal protection tiles have to be right. The software has to be right. The vehicle has to pass a brutal campaign of testing, shake tables and thermal vacuum chambers, and acoustic tests that simulate the scream of launch, and NASA has to sign off on every piece of it before it goes anywhere near the station. And there's a second dependency that isn't even Sierra Space's fault. Dream Chaser is supposed to launch on the Vulcan rocket, United Launch Alliance's new booster, and you can't fly your space plane until the rocket underneath it is ready and certified, and has slots on the schedule. Vulcan has had its own timeline, so even a finished space plane sits and waits. This is the honest reality of new aerospace hardware. And it's the same lesson we keep coming back to on this show. The demo video is easy, the render is easy, the airplane, or in this case, the space plane, that survives every test and actually flies the mission. That's the part that takes the years and eats the budget. Dream Chaser is not vaporware. There is real flight-ready metal sitting in a factory in Colorado, but real hardware and flown hardware are two different things, and until Tenacity comes home on a runway for the first time, we're all still waiting to see the picture I painted at the top of this segment happen for real. So where does that leave a pilot trying to make sense of it? I'd put it this way. Dream Chaser is the clearest example we have of aviation and spaceflight becoming the same discipline. For most of the space age, those were two different worlds. Astronauts rode, pilots flew, the capsule was a machine you were a passenger inside of, and the airplane was a machine you commanded, a space plane that folds its wings, rides a rocket to orbit, and then flies itself down final to a runway rollout, is the place where those two worlds finally close up into one, and the ideas that make it possible aren't exotic. They're the ideas we talk about on this show every week. Lift versus drag, trading energy for a landing you can make. Gliding a heavy body down to a runway with no engine, which if you think about it is exactly what the Gimli glider did over Manitoba, just at a very different speed. Reusability, inspection, flying the same airframe again. That's airline thinking applied to orbit. Here's the thing I keep coming back to. The pilots who flew those wingless lifting bodies over the California desert in 1966 had no autopilot, no fly-by-wire, no computer to save them, and they proved the shape could come home. Almost 60 years later, we finally built the vehicle that turns their dead-stick desert glides into a routine cargo run. That's not hype, that's just a long, patient engineering conversation, finally reaching the runway. My information on the vehicle's design, its testing campaign, and its schedule comes from Sierra Space and NASA, and the history of the lifting body program comes from NASA's own flight research records out at what's now Armstrong. If you want the pictures, and you really do want to see this shape with your own eyes, we keep links and more of these breakdowns over at radiohangar.com. Next time a capsule splashes down and everybody cheers, I want you to remember there's another way home. Wings, a runway, and a rollout. Tenacity's turn is coming. I'm Vector. Keep your eyes down the runway.